The Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1 with Benecol. Favourites in homes all over Ireland. Benecol. Take control of your cholesterol.
Liam Ryan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ryan.
Your story is going to sound horrendous to people. You know that. And they're going to say, oh, good Lord, here's another hard luck story. And yet it's a story that has an extraordinary feel to it and an even more extraordinary end. So it's nice to see you and say hello to you. Where are you from, Liam?
I'm from Ballina Killaloe on the Clare-Tipperary border.
Beautiful part of the world.
Absolutely great place to live, it is.
I would imagine.
It's great.
Tell us a bit about yourself, would you? Where are you from and what you do what you've been doing?
I'm originally from a little village on another border, on the Westmeath-Offaly border, called Horsesleep. And I grew up there. We had the family pub in the village, and I'm the youngest of four. I have three great sisters, Carol, Dolores, and Eleanor. And I had my Leaving Cert done before I realised what I wanted to be, and that was to be an architect. So I ended up going to Liverpool to study.
Yeah. And it's a great old city, isn't it?
People who go there to study tend to end up doing a lot more there. It's the type of city you get stuck in gladly, really. So after I qualified, I got a job at a lovely practice in the city itself, and I was there a long time. And I met my wife Pam in as a student actually, and we got married in 89. So everything was fine. We were living in a lovely little red brick terrace, the equivalent of Rat Mines, I suppose. And then
in Liverpool. And was Pam Liverpoolian?
She's a Scouser, all right.
Scouser.
She's actually more Irish than I am when it came to the crunch, really, because when our eldest boy Christy was born and became a toddler, we just had a little backyard, so we needed a back garden for him, really. So of course I'm come day go day. I thought, oh well, we better buy a semi somewhere. And she was the one who actually prompted and said, well, you know, why do that now, and then we'll move again in a couple of years' time. Why not go to Ireland? I went, no, never thought of that. So we struck really lucky because we came over that summer of 95 to do a tour of the country, really, and to see how things were. We were both architects, so obviously looking for work in the same area. And of course, 95 was the last great summer we really had, and the Celtic Tiger was just coming around the corner. Yeah. So Ireland looked absolutely at its best. So there and then we decided, right, it's a great time to move. We went back to Liverpool, put the house on the market. And within about 8 months, I think I was over. I came to Limerick first, but within a year of that, we set up our own husband and wife practice in Ballina Killaloe. And we had a lovely little niche, really. We did a lot of one-off housing around the lake itself, which you know down there. So yeah, we kind of filled that middle area between Limerick, Ennis and Nina. And for housing architects, people like kind of smaller scale and one-to-one, and you know, the fellow you meet also licks the envelopes and writes the addresses on them, that, you know, housing is very personal, really. So we had absolute, almost idyllic little lifestyle, really, and great local community down there, which we bedded into very easily and very quickly. So that, and then we had two more boys in the next couple of years. Lowell came along 2 years after Christy, and Abe, our youngest boy, was born in 2000.
So life sounds grand.
So good so far.
So good so far. You're hitting what at this point? About 40 years old when you...
40 years old. I actually had my 40th in 2001, and everything was fine. We were raising the boys and life couldn't have been better. We lived in a lovely place.
The first cloud formed.
Roughly 7 years ago exactly.
It was
April 2002, and I just started to get intermittent headaches. Unusual. They weren't as kind of, they weren't debilitating like a migraine would be, but they were across the bridge of the nose, really, a little bit lower on the head. But they'd come and go, I was a typical man. I just did nothing for a week, really. And of course, the women are far better at health issues, much more thorough. And so Pam, of course, pushed me out the door down to the doctor after a week. And so there was absolutely no reason to suspect anything. I have six marathons under my belt at that point, and I wasn't carrying any weight, and I'd never smoked. and I'd never had any illness of any kind, really. So there was no reason to suspect anything severe. So it looked like a sinus complaint, really. That's what the initial diagnosis was by both the GP, and then I went to the dentist as well just to check that I didn't have an abscess.
Mm.
So I ended up going into when the antibiotics didn't work, I ended up going into the regional hospital in Limerick for what we call a sinus wash. And it's a routine procedure where they literally just flush out any infection you would have in your sinus.
Sure.
So I was on Ward 2C in the regional, and I'm going to take this opportunity to compliment the wonderful staff that are there under the absolutely inspiring ward sister, Carmel O'Sullivan. And my consultant, John Fenton, was around my own age, and as it turned out, he had spent time in Liverpool as well. So we got on like a house on fire straight off, and we had lots of things to talk about from Merseyside. And so I was nearly beginning to enjoy my stay. I was having great crack on the ward, and it was a routine procedure, and I was going to be in for 2 nights. I said, this, I can put my feet up and read the papers, and this is great. So he did the sinus wash, and then I wouldn't know anything until the next day when he was on his rounds. I'll never forget this day. I was in a 2-bed ward, and both John Fenton and Carmel came on the rounds the next morning, and they had an entourage of about 6 behind them, you know, the house doctors or whatever. So as soon as I saw them, I bolted up in the bed and a big smile on my face to kind of greet them as they came in the door. And from then on, really, it was like slow motion. There was a couple of seconds before they got to bed, and I could just see there was blank faces in response. And I thought, this isn't right. You know, I was here having great laughs with these people yesterday, and in complete silence, they just came over to the bed, drew the curtain around, and John Fenton just looked me straight in the face, and he said, Liam, this is very serious. And the bottom on that statement alone, by the way he said it, it just fell out of my world. And if you talk to any cancer patients, I think the majority will always tell you that the worst day of all is the very first time you get the news. I mean, in my case, I got tougher news after that, but once I knew what I had, I was better able to take some of the blows that were down the line. That particular day, you just had no preparation for this. You went from 60 to naught in 2 seconds. And really, you just saw the worst case scenario. You couldn't see anything but, and you felt as if, this is it, I'm going to die.
And what was the news?
Well, the news was, when he flushed out the sinus, initially nothing came out, and that normally is a good sign. Oh, that means there's no infection. But of course, he knew by me that there was something in there. So he drew out with the syringe what he described to me as like a cheese-like substance. And apparently the whole theatre had never seen anything like this before and were aghast. And so it was a massive stage 4 tumour. Stage 4 is the most advanced cancer tumour you can have. In fact, one consultant later said to me, mine could have been called stage 44. And he drew this thing out, and he knew then, I mean, he waited for a scan the next day before confirming it, but he knew then I was in serious trouble. So he's an ENT consultant, and he thought at that point that I was beyond any treatment, really. And he said to me 2 days later, when after that particular day, I was grand, really. But so I had toughened up, and he said to me, Liam, you're the second worst case I've ever seen, and the worst case was dead in a month. And that was all he had to compare me to, really.
Where was the tumour, Liam?
The tumour, Ryan, was in my sinus, in behind my cheekbone, if you like, and going around the eye and backing up to my brainstem. So it was in the only little bit of soft pocket in the middle of your head that's kind of between your cheekbones, your brain and the top of your spine. And it had filled that zone. And I suppose I was unlucky in a way in that obviously your head is everything. Your head is your computer, your eyes, yeah, ears, nose, and everything is in there. And I was unlucky that it had got so advanced without any warning. I had no real previous signs that this thing was growing in there.
What were you given percentage wise at the risk of being clinical of survival?
Well,
of a cure at least.
Well, John at that point thought there was no option for me, really. But he's not an oncologist, in fairness, so we were, by now we were very good friends. And I said, look, John, if this was you, where would you go? So he said to me, he said, you've got head and neck cancer, which is quite rare, especially for a man of my age. It's normally for with older men later in life. And he said to me, as it turned out, he said, Liam, as far as I'm concerned, you need two things. You need very complex surgery and you need radical radiotherapy. And what we need to do is to get you the two of those together in the one place. He said, you could get one or either here or there. And he said, as far as I'm concerned, the best head and neck centre of excellence in Europe is in Liverpool. So he was sending me back to Liverpool, which was a lovely twist, really.
Yeah.
The city that had taken him in before, really. So within a week, he referred me to see two consultants over there, Simon Rogers and Dave Husband. So they had a scan then and they were able to, you know, they knew exactly what they were looking at. And the problem with my tumour was when a tumour is so advanced like that, they like to remove it and a further centimetre completely all around the tumour just to cover any little hidden entrails that you can't see. But in my case, this wasn't going to be possible because my tumour was right up against my brainstem. So that meant that the surgery was not going to, could not be entirely relied upon, and I was going to have to rely on the radiotherapy then to kill off any of the tumour that possibly wouldn't be removed.
What were they talking about removing then from your face and your head?
Well, it was to be a 12-hour operation. They were literally going to cut me from the bottom of my ear across to my nose, break my jaw and down to my chin, and they were going to fold away that lower half of my jaw and go in there, cut out a lot of my cheekbone and remove the tumour all from the sinus and going right around the eye into the brain. So they were these incredible men and women were 12 hours in the middle of my head. I mean,
what were the chances of something, you know, going not so much wrong, but of you not being able to see, speak, eat? I mean, were you told this before you go into such an operation? What did they say to you?
I was. Well, they said, you know, literally, I guess it's like taking out the engine of a car. They had to disconnect everything.
Yeah.
All the nerves coming from the brain and then go in and take it out and do the repair. What they took bone off my hip to rebuild the cheek and they had to, that was screwed in. And then, of course, they had to reconnect everything.
Mm.
So, in all fairness, they had no real idea how the jaw would go back. So, we're moving into what I call miracle number two now, Ryan, at this stage, really, because my recovery is, at this stage, an even bigger story than my survival. At the time, I was strong by now, and I would have taken anything. I would have taken blind, wheelchair. I just wanted to be alive.
Where were the children then, Pam, in the middle of all of this?
Well, The unsung heroes in all of this are the partners, really, and I married the most wonderful woman because she really took all of this on, and she had to worry about the likelihood of me passing away, which at this point, in all fairness, looked very inevitable. Then, I mean, Abe was only one, so how much do you tell the children? And then we were in two different countries. We had a business that had just closed down for, you know, when I got sick. So Pam was really the person who was in my corner, tying all this together. And obviously neighbours were calling and very caring and considerate and wanting to know the news. And in every illness case, that's what the partner does. And you know, in all the attention was coming to me and all the mass cards and the get well wishes. Now, I know that our community in Ballinakilloo is excellent and they all thought of Pam as well. But the partners are fantastic. And I think of people in caring roles, you know, at home. I mean, it is just, they're unsung heroes all over the country.
Did you think you were going to die? Had you addressed this in your own head with your maker?
Well, that has been asked to me several times, really. And my answer there is, of course I did, because I really would have been foolish not to. You know, the one thing about an illness, of course, is it gives you lots of time. You have time in recovery. So I always knew I would have an Achilles heel if I didn't go into that scenario of look, Liam, you're not going to be here next week. How do you feel? So one particular evening in the hospital, I played that exact scene across, you know, for myself. And Ryan, in all honesty, I was surprised at what I found because, you know, okay, I was 40, but I had lived a life. I had a great family. I'd been educated, career, married a great woman, lived long enough to see my own three children come into the world, set up a business in the lovely twin towns of Ballina and Killaloe. I had reached the curve in the hill and I was beginning to go down the other side. And then suddenly I'd pick up the paper and I'd read about a three-year-old diagnosed with leukemia or a 17-year-old who comes off a motorbike. And I had perspective then of how far I had got in life compared to others. And that gave me great strength then. I said, OK, well, a bit short, but if it has to be, it has to be. And then all I did at that point, that was as far as I wanted to go. I literally put it in a break glass case and I said, I'm going to put that away now because I know that's there for me. If I need to go back into that, I know I'm not going to die in a hurry. Mm. Every other, we'll have gone down every possible road and there'll only be one left. And then I'll go back into those thoughts. But until that day comes, I am going to fight this every inch of the way and I'm going to take it on. But really, when I had put that away, I was literally at that point where I'm not afraid to die. So nothing could touch me then.
Can I ask you about your first drink? And I don't mean your pint. After the operation, when your face had been cut and pasted back together again by the extraordinary medical people in Liverpool. And tell me about that drink, will you?
Well, that when I came out of the surgery, after 12 hours, I was in intensive care for a day and a half. And then I eventually got back to the ward. And when I realised my position my condition in the ward, I had about 10 tubes coming out of me. I was breathing through a tracheostomy, so they had punctured my neck just under the chin. And because my mouth was out of action, I was fed directly into my stomach with a PEG tube. So literally for that week, Ryan, I was not able to walk, talk, eat, drink or sleep. And it was only when I was denied all those things that we just take so for granted, yeah. You know. I mean, you don't just drink. You want a cappuccino, you're disappointed if they just have ordinary coffee.
Yeah.
And I suddenly had all these five essentials stripped from me.
Mm.
And it just gave me a fantastic appreciation, really, of the things we take for granted on the simple things we take for granted on a daily basis, let alone driving a car or flying an airplane or, you know, and we're starting to take them for granted now, of course, as well. So these are the pluses in an illness. It just gives you a great perspective on your life. You look at your life and you look back in your life and you see everything differently, you know.
So along comes the tray with the glass.
So along comes the tray, yes. And the tracheostomy, I hated the tracheostomy. I was a pretty good patient in most things, but that I hated the tracheostomy because the air that it was sending down to my lungs had to be moistened. And so the moisture would collect in my throat and I'd have to cough to clear the air. And of course, my hip was very sore from where they'd taken off the bone to rebuild the cheek. And the coughs were fairly ineffective anyway because the tracheostomy was stuck in the throat. So I was in this terrible, painful cycle of coughing and getting nowhere and coughing again. I didn't want to cough. I was trying not to cough, but the moisture would just build up. So after a week, the tracheostomy was taken out and it was the biggest thing for me in terms of progress. I hated the damn thing at that point.
Yeah.
So I uttered my first word a few minutes later and then another minute after that, a glass of ice water was brought to the bed. And Ryan, it was like if you just imagine your favourite drink on the hottest day in the Sahara you could imagine, it probably comes somewhere close, but not even near. It was just tasted probably like drinking for the very first time. It was a beautiful sensation.
I'm reminded of The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. I don't know if you read that book, but it's that's the guy had locked-in syndrome and he was remembering and reminiscing by blinking his story about shaving. And
yes.
I'll never forget just the beauty of the feel of the foam on the chin and the that's scrape right. of the blade on the cheek yeah. and just thinking, we do it every day. We take it for granted. And that glass of water now, you know, as I said, I don't think I'll ever buy a bottle of water can and take it for granted the way, you, the way you're talking. Your operation was unquestionably a success. And then you had this bizarre series of events that just, you know, just when you thought it was safe to leave a hospital. I mean, within the very hospital after you were in recovery, you what happened to you then?
Well, obviously after the operation, I had been opened up so much, and all my nasal passages had been to the brain were very vulnerable and broad at this stage. So I was very open to infection, really. So when I went back to the ward, and again, it was Pam really who picked this up, because I was very tired anyway. And the nursing staff, you know, they have other people to look at, and they'd be passing and looking at me, and I'd be sleeping. But Pam knew from the previous couple of days there was something not right about me. I was going backwards rather than forwards. So it turned out I was rushed into the neuro wing of the hospital. They thought I had hydrocephalus, which is water in the brain. Mm. But because my immune system was so shot, I had bacterial meningitis, and I was actually very critical for about 24 hours, for which I was completely comatosed. I don't remember any of it. So I was on my fight path at this stage, and that was fine, even with the cancer and the 5%, but the setbacks are harder to take because you haven't got your plan in place for them, really. So when I came round in the neuro wing, I was 10 days back from where I was before I went in. I had all the tubes back in, and I was confined to the bed again, and I was being fed through the PEG tube. And again, I probably was disillusioned for an hour or two, and I thought, oh God, I've got to go back through all those steps again. But the bit now, we haven't mentioned all this. I've been a regular runner over the last, now not to any great level, but over the previous 10, 15 years, really, on and off. So I adopted the spirit of long distance running. Of, well, look, it's not about the 26 miles or the 10K. It's the next bend. It's the next turn. It's plug away. It's get one of those tubes out by tomorrow. Or get to sit up on the bed. You know, don't be thinking of going for the meal in the hotel. Think of the next glass of water, as you say. Yeah, yeah. And that's the strategy. You've got to bite off the little chunks and gobble them up one at a time.
But when you got the pain in your leg then, after that, like I say, you know, I'm thinking of the song, I get knocked down, yeah, but I get up again. I mean, here you go, well, another thump. What happened to the leg?
That was a DVT, a deep vein thrombosis. And
so you're now dragging your right leg behind.
I'm now dragging the right leg.
I mean, it's like you just keep getting
pummeled. And I'm still waiting for radiotherapy. I'm still waiting for the next.
Well, of course, might as well throw that in too at this stage, you know.
Yes, these were tough times because the setbacks were coming thick and fast.
I mean, really.
And the swelling had gone down, though. I was looking less like the Elephant Man at this stage.
Ah, so, and then, you know, I know you went on your holiday to Lanzarote when you were trying to get through all of this.
Meningitis again.
You got struck by meningitis again on your holidays 2 days in. This was the recovery holiday, back alive and well.
That's right. That was the happy ending to the... And that caught me as well, because I'd been very positive to date, and I was a very good patient both in Limerick and in Liverpool.
Yes.
So we went to the Canaries on after the radiotherapy went fairly straightforward enough, really, and I finished in mid-October. So about a month later, mid-November, we decided to take a family holiday, and it was just what Pam and the three boys needed.
And deserved,
absolutely. And for me too, it seemed to make good sense. We'd get a bit of sunshine and then we'd come back for the run into Christmas.
Of course.
So we were 2 days out there, and I started to get violently sick, and... the doctor was called, and she was all, we'll never, this is one of the little sub stories, but she recognized I was very serious, and she tearfully just looked at Pam and said, well, at least you have the children. They are beautiful.
Oh dear.
And it was a real standout line, you know, as if, you know, you mightn't be taking your husband home with you. So my three brilliant sisters, Carol, Dolores and Eleanor, were summoned, because again, it looked like, you know, it could be the end of the road again.
Yes.
So I was flown by helicopter to Gran Canaria, and I was, again, lumbar puncture, diagnosed meningitis again. Hooked back up to the IV. Again, I was out of it. I knew nothing of any of this. And I came around 2 or 3 days later, and it was under control. So it was just a question of going through the medication. But I I found I caught myself out because I really had gone out to the Canaries to have a holiday and I was not prepared to accept this. All of a sudden I've gone from which restaurant will we dine in tonight to I'm on the flat of my back again and there's a tray of hospital food coming towards me. And other little things, like I'm quite sociable really and I used to enjoy the chats in the wards and with the staff. And in a foreign hospital, you don't have that. I mean, none of the patients spoke English and neither did the staff really. And I didn't like the food at all. So I was just a grumpy old git for that week, unknowns to myself, because I was nearly kind of giving out to people for not taking a positive approach when they get ill up to that and saying, look, it's your best chance of cure. And I found out, well, it's not automatic, you know. So after a week, I eventually let go of the holiday. I said, look, Liam, the holiday's gone. Get your head down here now and get through this medication and get out of here. So I was another 2 weeks in that hospital and... With all due respect to the Canaries, I'm afraid I never want to go
ever again.
And it's not the island's fault.
No. Liam, why did you want to tell your story on Irish radio this morning? Why did you want to come in and talk to us today?
Because this story, it has already been in the written print,
yeah.
Ryan. It's been in the Sunday newspapers quite a bit now at this stage.
Yeah.
And those articles have gone kind of... through friends of friends, and I've had responses to that article from as far away as New Zealand and Canada. And the answer to that is there are very few people like me walking around. My consultant in Liverpool, the show I call over socially, he said to me, they tell you more, of course. It's great for them to see me now, really, because I am the walking example of their fantastic work. But he said to me, Liam, you were the next notch down from terminal cancer. And he said, we didn't think for most of it that you were going to make it because we were so reliant on the radiotherapy. So, Ryan, I just feel I have a light that shouldn't go under a bushel. I can inspire anybody listening to this today that's been given... you know, a 50% chance, a 40% chance, that's way more than I was given. And look at me today. I'm 7 years on, well out of remission. I have a new job now. I'm construction manager for a brilliant new project, the Eco Village in Clochjordan. I ran 4 10Ks last summer.
Did you really?
I'm going to gigs. I'm going to Stiff Little Fingers tonight in Dolan's in Limerick. Myself and Christy are going. We went to Smashing Pumpkins last year. I'm on a second life, and if I go tomorrow, every second I've had of the last 7 years has been worth it in itself. And I'm not going to go tomorrow. So,
are you spending the money you didn't think you had? And I use that as an analogy. Are you that idea of the second life? Do you feel like you've won the life's lottery in some respects, and you're spending it with all your heart?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you a little story on that. 2005, when you two were last here and they played the three gigs in
Crow
Park. Christy was 11 then, and Christy and myself now are getting into the same kind of music, which is great,
right.
Kind of father and son together. And I decided late on, I'd left it too late, that I wanted to bring him to you two. So by then the tickets were sold out. I would... have a few reliable contacts through the years. So I put the feelers out. I said, you know, I'm looking for two tickets for you too. So the weeks wore on anyway, and nothing came in. And the next thing, it was the week of the concert. So I'd kind of given it up at that point. I said, oh, well, sure, I tried anyway. And so the Friday night of the first gig came anyway, and I went down to my local pub in Ballina, and I went in the door and I noticed there was a few faces missing. So I went in the door and I said, oh, where's Ryan Tuberty tonight? Oh, he's gone to you too. Where's Ryan Tuberty's granny tonight? Oh, she's gone to U2 as well. So the whole place was gone to U2, and I thought, well, this isn't on, you know. So I had a few drinks then anyway, and then I was getting crotchety about this. So I went home that night, and about 2:30 I went home, and I said, and for those gigs then, there was a couple of tickets starting to come back because there was credit card fraud. So I said, I bet you some of those Ticketmaster people, maybe they put them on 3 o'clock in the morning before they go to bed, and I'll click in now and I'll just see. So I clicked onto the Ticketmaster website anyway, and U2 Crow Park, nothing, all sold out. But cute enough on those websites, they always have other concerts available.
Yes, yeah.
So they had Cardiff Wednesday night. So I said, oh, look, sure, here, I'll just click and I'll have a look. So Cardiff Wednesday night, two fantastic seats, prang in the middle of the stand, just looking onto the side of the stage. That looks... Asher, here, I'll just check the ferries. Checked Rosslare Fishguard anyway. Space available. So poor old Pam was too asleep to ask for permission or to run it by her, and by now I was on adrenaline. Now, and this is the second life. I'm getting back to the second life story.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, I'm going. That's it. So I just booked it. Now, if that was pre-cancer, I would have been too... There's no way Plan B would have ever...
Yeah.
I would have just said, look, I tried to go to Crow Park. I'm too busy. So poor old Christy, he was asleep, and I shook him. I said, we're going to U2. So the next morning he said, I had a dream last night that some mad Egypt was shaking me, saying we're going to U2. So to complete the story, I went back to the pub on the next Friday night, and I went into the Ryan Tubridys and I said,
yeah,
well, I believe you had a bit of drizzle in Crow Park last weekend at U2. Well, I decided that I'd go over to the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff where they had the roof closed, and I was lovely and dry on the Wednesday night. And this is the, you know, there's loads of stories like that where I have a kind of a pleasant recklessness now in the second
half.
That's what you
have to call your book, you know. Pleasant Recklessness by Liam Ryan. It's a lovely way of describing. Liam, thank you for coming in this morning.
A lot of
people very happy to hear your story. Totally amazingly positive, says somebody by text. Still managed
that's
to
great.
Keep your great sense of humour. Lots of love from Nikki and Athlone. Your guest has just brought me back to 1997 when I got the same news in similar circumstances. There is life after brain surgery. I had a pain in the sinus area for years and was just given antibiotics until my nightmare happened. Good luck to you, Liam, she says, from Marion Gargan. And Mary says, I'm in tears in the kitchen. This story is amazing. Liam was doing what we were all doing with our families when this bomb went off in his life. We all dread this, and I appreciate this morning more already. So thank you for that, Liam. And it's very good to talk to you
thank
in such
you,
good
Ryan.
Health.
You're great. Thanks
I'm sure you'll
much.
Enjoy you too, wherever you happen to go to see them with Christy. Give them a shake some morning.
The Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1 with debate on the issues of the day. Sponsored by Benecol with a variety of ways to lower your cholesterol.